I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 4th of December. Scientific American had an interesting article in their November issue that prompted today's conversation. The article is titled Solar Wars: The Growing Popularity of Solar Power on Rooftops Spurs a Utility Backlash. That article, coupled with We Energy's increase of monthly facilities fees on all customers and adding charges to those who produce grid-tied renewable energy, were the impetus for today's show. And we have three guests with us during the course of this hour. We'll be welcoming your phone calls as well. Samantha Williams, staff attorney in Chicago for the Natural Resources Defense Council, will join us. Bill Skews later on, executive director of the Wisconsin Utilities Association. And yet later on, Matt Newman, owner of Sunvest and president of the Wisconsin Solar Energy Industries Association. I have a feeling that we'll have many phone calls, which should be applicable for the entire hour. So here's how you reach us. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, leave your messages, like us, and you'll get updates on shows that are coming up. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Samantha Williams, as we said, an attorney in the Natural Resources Defense Council's Midwest office, focusing on energy efficiency and renewables in Ohio and Minnesota. Previously, she was a policy advisor at the Midwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, where she assisted the Kentucky Energy Cabinet in developing a comprehensive energy efficiency policy, and prior to that, litigated on behalf of citizens groups in San Francisco to enforce the Clean Water Act. Samantha, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Well, let's start with that Scientific American article and ask if you would agree that the growing popularity of solar on rooftops has sparked a utility backlash in this country.
I would say backlash is the appropriate word, Kathleen. We are really seeing this nationwide. You know, in the last decade or so, this problem has started to emerge. We've seen large changes in the way that energy is consumed. More customers are reducing their energy use for a number of reasons. One is that there's just shifting load, the timing and growth of energy demand. But another is more and more customers are choosing to move their energy use onto their rooftops. And they're also choosing to invest more in energy efficiency. And as a result, utilities are really seeing flattened sales, and they are starting to scramble to try to address ways to recover their costs. So that's really a growing trend that we see across the nation, and we also see it happening here in the Midwest, too, although on a slightly smaller and more gradual scale than places like Arizona or California.
Well, eventually, in order to keep the planet healthy, I would think, we're going to have to go the direction of renewables. We'll have to go more solar, or we may be doing ourselves in.
Completely agree there. More solar, more wind, more energy efficiency. We see customers, consumers in Wisconsin and across the nation wanting more and more clean energy. They want their utility to invest more, and they want to have the option to do it themselves as well. And so what we see here is really a growing tug of war between what we would call entrenched utility rate making and this desire to transform the electric industry into a more clean energy system that customers have a bit more control over.
So what kind of model do we need to be looking at? Is there a state that has a good model?
Well, we think that actually Minnesota has a good and growing model. They are investing more and more in both utility-scale energy efficiency and renewables, but also their utilities there are supporting rooftop solar as well. And one of the things that's happening there is we have a public service commission. That's the commission that sort of holds the line on these rate issues. They have helped design utility rates that encourage rooftop solar, that encourage efficiency, and reward the utilities to do that. So we see sort of that give and take between the utilities responding to their customer needs, the regulators also trying to create a rate so that utilities can do that, but also utilities getting some financial benefit for that as well so that they continually want to provide those options for their customers.
And what kind of benefit are they getting?
It depends. Sometimes they get a shareholder incentive. Sometimes they get a margin of lost revenue that they get at the end of the year. Other times they'll get what's called a shared savings incentive. So, for example, in energy efficiency, customers will save a certain amount of energy on their bills as a result of efficiency programs. And if a utility exceeds expectations for how much efficiency they can give their customers, they can actually retain a portion of that efficiency and keep that for themselves. And the reason why that works and it's actually better for customers is because it really provides that incentive for the utility to invest more and more and more in efficiency, and the customers are the ones that benefit.
Mm-hmm. Hour two of our program today, we're talking about the sixth mass extinction, which you believe is on its way if you read this paleontologist's view. I'm wondering, when we look at our overall energy picture, are we looking at use of fossil fuels, use of coal, does that comprise still the majority of our energy usage and is leaving a very large carbon footprint?
Well, I think, again, we're seeing customers wanting more and more clean energy options. So I think that push, and particularly in states that have restructured that are now moving towards competition, the utilities that are going to survive and are going to thrive are the ones that are going to offer more clean energy to their customers. So in that sense, I think we are moving and shifting to a cleaner grid. And the goal really is to decarbonize the energy grid. You know, I don't think that we will be seeing all coal plants going away anytime soon. Certainly natural gas is becoming more prevalent. But I think we will see a greater mix, a more diverse set of energy resources and more proportion of clean energy in that mix as well.
Utility companies, at least in Wisconsin, have been facing, Wisconsin We Energies has been facing criticism that the company is operating for the benefit of stockholders and not for the benefit of customers. Everybody's going to see an increase come January, and we'll talk to somebody from the industry about this, but it would appear that there's no incentive really for the less energy that you use. You're going to be charged really at higher rates than if you use more energy. I wonder about that particular model, the model of pleasing your stockholders. Is that indeed what's going on, and are we should we be looking at a whole different model of how we regulate utilities and how they're even formed?
I think so. I mean, there's you've probably seen in the news recently a term that's called the utility death spiral. And it's been thrown around as sort of a hot topic recently on utility and solar issues. But what you really see happening here is, like I was saying, as we have this energy market transforming to more distributed resources combined with flattening energy sales, utilities are really struggling to recover their costs. And the kind of costs I'm talking about are paying for the wires and the lines that send energy to your house, as well as meter reading, et cetera. But, of course, there's also shareholder incentives in there as well, and there are dividends every year. There's a certain revenue requirement that a utility has. And we certainly don't want to deny the utility that, but there are better options than what is being proposed right now in Wisconsin. And not to get too arcane onto what that proposal looks like, but, the utility didn't, as far as we can tell, didn't look at alternatives before falling back on a more traditional way of getting their recovery, which is just to increase bills for customers. Mm-hmm. We just don't think that's the way. That's going to be a much more rigid system, both for the utility and consumers moving forward. And it doesn't benefit anyone or serve the needs of clean energy. And like you were saying, it's going to be a higher hurdle as a result for customers to invest in efficiency and renewables.
The other thing I just need to bring up, because you look at the salaries, at least in Wisconsin, and I guess Wisconsin is pretty highly paid. It didn't used to be, but the salaries of CEOs of utility companies in this country are, it would appear to me, extremely high.
I would say that, well, I'll stay agnostic on that issue, Kathleen.
Okay.
I would say that the utilities right now in Wisconsin that have proposed these rate restructuring proposals, they are not in financial hardship. I'll just say that right now. They've had profitable years over the last few years. So they're certainly not experiencing revenue decline. And so that's one of the reasons why we have recommended, within the context of these cases, but also I think very publicly, that we just wish that the utilities and the Utilities Commission had taken a step back, taken a breath, and reevaluated what these proposals were going to do. You know, 8 out of 10 customers, for example, in the Madison territory, are going to see bill increases as a result of this proposal. So if the utilities are financially robust at this point in time, and there's not really urgency to have those restructuring proposals go through, why can't we just stop and take a breath and look at alternatives? And again, there are alternatives out there that are being used in other states that we really should be considering.
And what about the issue of encouraging people to use alternatives to oil and gas and coal? There was a movement, and I would imagine it's still around, to provide some kind of incentive for people to go to solar to reduce our footprint. Who should be in charge of that? Is that a responsibility of utilities as well to encourage people to use solar in a state, or is it completely opposed to their interests? Is there a way it's a part of it? It aligns with the utility company's interests.
Well, one of the things that we often say, and the rate designs that we put forward, are ways to actually align the utility interest and customer investment in solar and also investment in energy efficiency. Energy is typically sold like a commodity, and if we can break that link between how much the utility sells and how much revenue they can make, then we can make them somewhat agnostic to that link. Mm-hmm. And what that means is when they sell less energy, it means that their customers actually, you know, can still benefit, and it means that the utility is not somehow then financially on the hook. So I think there are definitely alternatives here. And you know, customers, again, are demanding these in Wisconsin.
We'll take phone calls in a moment. The utility representatives have been saying from We Energies that this higher fixed charge is a matter of fairness so that the non-energy portion of its bills more accurately reflects the cost of poles, wires, the lower solar payments criticized by solar companies and advocates. They're also saying that those people need to pay more because they're using the poles and the wires, and the cost of their bills doesn't accurately reflect that. Do you have a response to that?
I do, Kathleen. I'm very glad that you asked that question, because this question of whether or not folks who have rooftop solar are paying their fair share, that's one of the crux of the utility argument in many of these cases. It's the crux of their fairness argument, and it's, unfortunately, it's a red herring. We've dug into the numbers, and it's just a small fraction of customers right now that actually have rooftop solar in the service territory of most of these utilities. And so it begs the question, if it's such a small proportion, then why would you subject 8 out of 10 of the rest of your customers to these large bill increases to solve a problem that is largely hypothetical and possibly non-existent? And the other thing, too, is that the utilities don't seem to have a lot of information about their rooftop solar customers anyway. In these cases we've been in, we've asked how many customers do you have, what are their impacts on the grid, what are their proportions, and a lot of those questions remain unanswered. And so, again, it begs the question of why these proposals are being laid at the feet, or the blame is being laid at the feet of solar customers.
Let's go to some phone calls for you before we change guests. We have three guests this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. Jim in Viroqua, our first caller for you, Samantha. Hi, Jim.
Yes. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Hey, this is a great show and really timely for me because as we speak, believe it or not, I have a couple of people assembling a tracker with 16 Solar World panels in my driveway, about 50 feet from where I'm talking to you now.
Uh-huh.
And it's really an interesting topic, and it really spreads over the whole energy conservation thing, because the same thing with a car. I run a farm, and I've got a one-ton diesel truck, but I've also got a Chevy Cruze Eco that gets 42 miles to the gallon. And, you know, as the owner of a farm operation, and if you look at businesses, the CEO of a business, and I hate to see us pick on salaries for companies, but the CEO of a publicly traded company has a fiduciary responsibility to maximize his income for his shareholders, not for his customers. I mean, it took me a long time to realize that in business. And related to that, as we reduce gasoline consumption, we're reducing the highway taxes and need alternate gasoline taxes. We need alternate ways to keep up our infrastructure. So I am very fortunate to be – this is a much larger issue, and we need to get away from the conventional way of looking at things, as your guest has commented on. But as far as solar goes, I think the key to solar is being able to drive your meter backwards. up until recent years, if you had a solar system, you had to store your own power. You had expensive and inefficient battery systems.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm fortunate to be part of a rural electric co-op here, Vernon Electric, that in fact has their own solar farm and is a big proponent of solar, but they're permitting me to drive my meter backwards. Now, I have no problem with paying for the distribution systems, and really I'm not going to be able to make any money on this deal over a year, but what I can do is I can run my cattle operation with less net power from the utility, which I think is what we're all trying to work towards. So I wanted to say thank you very much, and I think the key is that we're going to have to get away from the conventional way of looking at it, the fiduciary responsibility of a public company. And this is where we have to rely on the Public Service Commission to really think beyond the current model and to think of the future. And, yes, we need to cover our distribution costs. But if we put rooftop solar on, or I've got a tracker, which, by the way, is made in Prairie du Chien here. They have a wonderful system made locally. That we need to think beyond the current methods of financing all this, you know. And this is where the Public Service Commission has to serve kind of an intermediary between the fiduciary responsibilities of the power companies and the logical future of energy conservation. And one more thing I would like to add is that thinking about this and looking at my bill from last year and our rural electric co-op provides wonderful data on your usage over day by day over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
LED light bulbs, if you just look at what you can do by changing not every bulb in your house maybe, but the ones that are on all the time, you can go from 65 watts down to 11 watts with just changing a light bulb. And the prices are coming down, and they're now warm white where they used to be this awful blue color.
Right. All right. Thank you, Jim, very much for your call. We're just short on time. Samantha, would you like to respond?
Just to agree wholeheartedly with Jim about the need for transformative approaches here for the utility industry. Again, I mean, it's very clear that folks like Jim want more renewable options. They want more ability to invest in energy efficiency. We're hearing that loud and clear out of all of these areas in Wisconsin and across the country. And so, again, if we have this opportunity before the financial situation becomes more difficult for utilities, then why won't we just take a step back, put the brakes on, and actually develop better rate-making alternatives that actually can satisfy the needs of both the utility and the consumer.
Samantha, thank you. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll talk longer at another date. Samantha Williams is staff attorney in Chicago for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Joining us momentarily, Bill Skews. Bill is executive director of the Wisconsin Utilities Association. In October, he wrote an opinion piece for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the debate that was taking place in Wisconsin and across the nation. As he writes, regulators, policymakers, and citizens struggle to define the role that customer-owned electric generating systems will play in the future of energy production. He talked about the cases that we've been discussing and says that there has been an attempt by We Energies to design electric rates so that everyone who uses the electric grid pays his or her fair share of the cost. So we'll talk about that as we continue. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now is Bill Skews. Bill is executive director of the Wisconsin Utilities Association. Our phone number remaining the same. I'm sorry we have many guests, but we will get to more of your calls. Bill, thank you very much for joining our conversation.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Our part of our program was prompted by, I'm sure you saw this article in Scientific American, and let me ask you what you think of the title of it. The growing popularity of solar power on rooftops, the author says, spurs a utility backlash. Do you see a backlash?
You know, I think the word backlash is a little extreme, and it's important to think of it in this context, that this is a response by utilities to what they see as an emerging problem that they have to address before it gets too far out of hand, and that is the growth of distributed generation on the electric system and who's going to pay, how will those costs for that be allocated fairly. So a backlash I don't think that's fair to call it that. It's a response, and it's a proactive attempt by the utilities to make sure that we structure our rates properly so that everyone who uses the grid pays their fair share of its costs. But we still have room to accommodate this growing customer desire for distributed generation, people having their own rooftop solar systems or wind generating systems or what have you in their own homes.
When you say you still have room for it, do you not think that considering what's happening all over the planet, that we will eventually move to an era where it will become our future?
Well, I think we're already on the path, well along the path, in fact, to increasing our reliance on renewable energy, or at least our use of it. For example, in Wisconsin, our utilities here since 2006 have invested about $2 billion in renewable energy systems to meet the required renewable portfolio standard, which was state law enacted in 2005, went into effect in 2006, and it requires that our state utilities get 10% of their energy from renewable sources by 2015. And I'm happy to report that our utilities are actually meeting and exceeding that number. So, and our utilities supported that legislation, and we've been ahead of schedule in meeting it. So, yeah, we are headed in that direction, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And when it's said that solar producers are currently not paying their fair share to use the grid, a lot of solar people would take issue with that. But what is meant by that from We Energy? They're not paying their fair share.
Sure, and that's a very good question. What it means is, and it, literally the meter spins backwards of that solar array when it's on your home, and your bill, the bill which has two parts to it, has the customer charge, which is the fixed charge to accommodate the cost of the pipes and the wires and the folks that fix the system when it breaks, and then the energy charge, which is supposed to measure the amount of energy you use in a given month. Well, if your meter is spinning backwards, you're not actually paying for your share of the cost of that infrastructure that it takes to serve you as a customer. So what this is trying to do is get at some way to make sure that even those folks, you know, whose meters are spinning backwards are at least paying a fair amount for what they use to get their electricity from the system when the sun doesn't shine, when the wind doesn't blow, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, that makes sense. From what I've read, tell me if this is wrong, that solar users are paying a $9 a month facilities charge, plus they're already paying a 9-month facilities charge for a separate meter that We Energies requires solar users to install to measure their solar output.
Right. They have to pay for the meter, which is a separate item, and then there's the cost to connect to the grid. So, yes.
So they're already paying more.
Well, they're paying for the use of what they need to connect to the grid. So they're paying more than the rate case specifically increases those infrastructure costs, which includes the meter and the wires and the poles and the other infrastructure I mentioned.
Uh-huh. So tell me, how does, considering the fact that everybody would agree that we need to be a bit more mindful about how we're using energy and the kinds of energy that we're using, what is it that We Energies is doing to promote use of renewable energies so that our carbon footprint is less? And does We Energies see it as part of its mission to do just that?
Well, I think every utility company in the state sees its mission as promoting the responsible use of renewable energy in a economically feasible way. So, and I'd rather not speak to We Energy specifically, if it's okay with you, but to all the companies that were actually involved in the rate cases generically, because they're trying to do much the same thing in all of those cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, what are they doing? They're building renewable energy facilities like the Domtar biomass facility in central Wisconsin, the wind farms that they've either connected to in other states or built in northeast Wisconsin. So those are a couple of examples of that.
Let's take a couple phone calls for you. Our number is 800-486-8655. And our guest this part of the show is Bill Hughes. He's the executive director of the Wisconsin Utilities Association. Gary and Rhinelander, hi. Gary, are you there?
Yes. Hi there.
Hi.
I enjoy the show very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
My comment is that it seems like all businesses wants to continue to make the same amount of money today and tomorrow, even though they're losing customers. Customers that seems to want to use renewable energies and try to use their own, so they're using less. So by going by charging the fair share, as you say, towards others and costing people who do not have already the monies to put up renewable energies is costing more money, and then it's going to make other people who are already paying a high price for, let's say, electricity or fuels and such, looking for alternative ways to spend less, which is some sort of either wind or solar power. So it just seems like that we're working backwards instead of working together.
Bill, what do you say to that?
I think that's a very interesting way to put it, and I appreciate that question. I just came from a conference recently where we were talking about this. And one of the points that was brought up is that folks don't get into solar power necessarily to save money. And he used the example in this panel discussion about, look, do you go to Starbucks and buy a $3 cup of coffee, or do you get the cheapest stuff at Quick Trip? Well, if you're one of those folks that buys the Starbucks cup of coffee, you're not doing it because it's cheaper. You're doing it because it's got another benefit in addition. So other than just the coffee itself, you like it better for whatever reason. So I don't think the solar debate is necessarily about saving money for people. When you consider that the money that's being saved is being transferred to the backs of everybody else on the system that pays, that subsidizes that solar array on someone's house. So ultimately, if you want a public policy that creates a subsidy, and you're free to make that argument, and I think, you know, people have made compelling arguments for different subsidies over the years of renewable energy, then make it about that and not about putting this on the bill of another customer who's not really aware of what he's paying for when he pays his infrastructure charges on his customer charge on his bill.
But surely that can't be very much money, is it? I mean, we don't have that many people using solar.
In net, there is not a ton of people right now in Wisconsin that are using distributed generation, solar, for example, to power their homes. And that, like I said at the beginning of the program, is why we're trying to redesign and restructure the rates now so that the whole point of the solar industry is to sell more solar. So before these rates get too far out of balance and distorted, we would need to fix the structure of them now. So the more people on the system don't end up being subsidized by the smaller diminishing pool of customers who pay for it.
Does there, and I'm wondering if utilities have made these kinds of plans. I was reading that in some countries that use lots and lots of solar, Germany being one of them, that they have forced some utility companies to just fold because solar has become so popular. Do all utilities need to look at that eventuality that renewables will take over as the form of energy that we use, and utilities will either fold or they're simply going to have to adapt to that?
Well, there are many lessons to be drawn from Germany, and one of them is that heavy subsidization of the renewables industry actually comes out of the costs of everybody who pays an electric bill. And that doesn't necessarily help your economy. That said, I think our utility companies and the energy industry in general across the country and across the world is always actively involved in finding more efficient ways to improve heat rates for their power plants, to look at every alternative they can to save energy. And do it and expend energy most efficiently. But again, the utility is a fixed cost business, and those things don't change with the amount of gas or electricity a customer uses. So if customers use less energy and they pay less of those fixed charges, well, that means that that adds risk to the utility's ability to recover the costs for those systems. But yet they still have the obligation under the regulatory compact to build that infrastructure and to deliver that energy. They're just less able to recover the cost of doing so. And that's really what this debate's all about. How will we structure this so that we're able to accommodate these systems going forward in the most fair way to allocate the cost among the users and payers of the system that we can.
One more call for you, and then we change guests. John in Madison, hi. John, are you there? I'm sorry, John's not there, so we'll say goodbye to you, and we thank you very much, Bill Skews, for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Bill Skews, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Utilities Association. Matt Newman is joining us now. Matt is President of the Wisconsin Solar Energy Industries Association, and he is owner of SunVet. There's been a lot of concern on the part of people who have installed solar or who may be thinking about installing solar that these extra fees are punitive and a push to put an additional charge on those who produce their own energy and sell it back to the grid, that they have a lot of questions about why that is happening right now and whether or not it's true that they're not paying their fair share. Some would say they're paying more than their fair share. And, of course, we look at the larger picture. What does all of this do to the future of solar in the state of Wisconsin? And so Matt is here to talk about just that. Hello, Matt. Thank you very much for being with us. Hi, Matt. Well, I don't know where he is. Oh, no. We'll get – he's there. There we go. Okay, we got him now. Hi, Matt. Hi, Matt.
Yeah, hi. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much for being with us. All right, so your response to how the solar industry in the state of Wisconsin has been will be impacted by the We Energy's rate changes that take place in January. What's it done to solar?
Well, nothing good other than, I guess, become a lot more motivating for – those of us that are in the private sector and would like an opportunity to offer people choices on where they buy their energy from and how it's produced, it's very motivating for us. What we really have working in our favor, which is something that the utilities don't have working in their favor, regardless of what regulatory changes they keep trying to push on us, is a simple fact that utility rates have been going up in the state of Wisconsin at a rate of 2.5 times the rate of inflation. Mm-hmm. And yet solar costs in the last 5 years have come down about 60 or 70% for fully installed costs. So while our costs are plummeting, utility costs are going up. And despite the fact that they're going to try to change the rate structure, and this is just the first of, I'm sure, many attempts that they're going to have to change the rate structure, at the end of the day, the overall market is not going in their favor, and that's why you're seeing these changes. And so while they may have slowed the growth of solar in the state of Wisconsin, it's not going to necessarily impact the overall growth of solar throughout the United States and throughout the world. And so until they figure out how to start getting their costs to come down instead of going up, they're still going to be fighting the wrong side of the curve, in my opinion.
So if you're a solar homeowner, what kinds of increased fees, taxes, or whatever you call it, are you going to see come January?
Well, the first thing, irregardless of solar, distributed generation, or anything else, one of the major rate changes that the utilities made for any small user, so residential, small, commercial, this does not impact, by the way, big business. It does not impact large manufacturers. Their rates remain basically stagnant, as far as I understand. So for small users, homeowners, and specifically in We Energy's area, their fixed charges on their monthly bills, this has nothing to do with how much energy you use. This is exactly what Bill was just talking about. This is just a charge to access the grid itself. Goes from $9 to $16 a month. Mm-hmm. So that's about a 75% increase. I believe MG&E's is actually a larger increase than that, and I think that WPS also has a larger increase than that. But that's not specific against solar. That's just something the utilities felt was a requirement to recover more of their fixed costs. And I, even being in the solar industry, I'm not necessarily opposed to that. We all use the grid. We've got to pay for service, you know, to use that grid. My issue is I don't think the variable rates, the cost of energy itself, went down enough to compensate for the fact that they increased the fixed charges.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the solar industry, of course, you know, if we're paying a higher fixed charge, that's fine. But why are you also then penalizing us with this demand fee which is strictly a solar tax. They can call it whatever they want. They call it a demand charge. It's actually a solar tax. That's the biggest issue I had with the We Energies rate case.
And that solar tax is, am I right with this, another $9 a month, or is it more than that?
No, that's based on the system size. So what's interesting about that is if you have, say, a 5-kilowatt system on a, you know, that's kind of enough to power a typical home, it's going to run you about another $17-$18 a month. So it basically takes the value of solar and reduces it by about 25% to 30%. And that's just strictly a solar tax. That's the utility's way of saying point blank, we are going to charge you and make money off of you regardless of whether or not you're buying energy from us. So even if you produce your own energy, they're going to tax you to earn a profit from you. They're going to say, you know, you heard Bill talking about it, it's because we're all using the grid.
Right.
But that's what they increase the fixed charges for.
Mm-hmm. That's a significant amount of money, $17 to $18 a month increase.
Yes, yes. And really what it's doing is it's offsetting the value of your solar production.
Mm-hmm.
And I could go through the math. It would probably bore you. But suffice to say, it reduces the value of solar by about 25 or 30%. So that's the easiest thing that they could do to reduce the value of solar today to slow the growth of it. And they would say it's the charge for the fact that they have standby demand. But the bottom line is this whole subsidy conversation that's going on, and I heard Bill use the word subsidy probably 30 times while he was on there. And I understand their perspective on that. But the biggest subsidy that's out there today in the energy business is a fully regulated monopoly model that guarantees utilities a fixed rate of return, and the return is based on how much money they spend. So it's how many assets they place in service and how much it costs them to deliver that energy. That's the number one subsidy in the energy business. So to say that their subsidy is going back the other way and not to look at themselves and their own business model and say, wow, we get quite a subsidy, no one is allowed to compete with us, and we're guaranteed a profit. To me, that's the biggest subsidy in the energy industry.
I've been reading, and it's kind of interesting, alliances are being formed here. I've been reading that one of the leaders, I believe she's from Georgia, and she's been in Wisconsin recently or will soon be coming, is a member of a Tea Party alliance, that it's a very large issue among people in the Tea Party who see it as a form of independence, if you want to do solar. It's American spirit. It's independent people.
Yeah, what's interesting is this really should be an issue that crosses political lines, and I know a lot of issues are supposedly, you know, bipartisan. This really should not be a political issue at all. This is a matter of whether or not you want the right to choose. And so Republicans, given how conservative our state has been here the last few years, and I'm one of them, by the way, but given how conservative we are as a state, I just can't imagine a situation where we wouldn't fully embrace free market capitalistic approach to energy. Why would we not encourage competition? Competition drives down cost. Regulated monopolies that are guaranteed a return is not going to control cost. It's proven not to. We can look at the history and look at what's happened, and it's great reliability. We Energies and the other utilities, they provide great reliability. The issue is the costs are going up at 2.5 times the rate of inflation. And that's not something that's going to be competitive to bring business to our state. So this is a conservative issue, not to mention national defense. When you start talking about power generation being done in one location and then being disseminated to customers all over, think about the target opportunity that is for any sort of a terrorist attack versus a situation where you have energy being produced on every rooftop all across the state or across the country. So there's a lot of reasons why this aligns directly with conservative philosophy. It surprises me a little bit that our state isn't more embracing of this industry that is growing by leaps and bounds throughout the country, and why we would try to stifle that growth here in our state.
We will be welcoming phone calls for you, and we'll take them momentarily. 800-486-8655 is our number. Here's an email from Michael who says, did anyone mention the fact that the 2-to-1 vote on this by the members of the Public Service Commission was along these lines? The two who voted yes were appointed by Governor Walker. The one vote for no was Governor Doyle appointee. Is that meaningful in any way to you?
Well, it shouldn't be, because the Public Service Commission, by definition, is there to serve the public interest and there to serve the ratepayers and protect ratepayers. So my honest side of me says, no, that should not matter. I have a cynical side, which I'd prefer not to talk about a whole lot on the air or otherwise, because I'd rather not think too much about it. So I just won't get into that.
All right. Let's go to phone calls for you. Ben in Green Bay. Hi, Ben.
Hi, good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Great. So I was recently a college student, and I studied economics. And during college, I was a huge, renewable energy advocate, and I still strongly believe that, we will need to get our entire economy off of fossil fuels at some point. During college, I went to Europe quite a bit and studied, renewable energy study tours. However, now that I'm working for a smart grid company, I've found myself being completely now aware to the full externalities on both sides of the issue. On one hand, climate change and these will have, serious costs that aren't accounted for in the price we pay for fuel, coal, and gas. But on the other hand, renewables truly do have a cost on the grid. These are externalities that aren't accounted for when we talk about, bringing more solar, bringing more wind, bringing more storage on. And so there's really two sides to the coin, that kind of selective externality recognition syndrome that we face. And I'm really happy that I work for a company called Innovari that is trying to be an interface between, the renewables and the utilities and all of the customers, and trying to make, bring these renewables behind the utility meter so that the renewables can be, and all of the prices and all of the energy that's being at the customer level can be kind of brought in as a rate-based asset, which is something that has never really been done before. Thanks for a great show, great guests, and all the comments have been really great so far. Thanks.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks. Matt?
Yep.
You want to respond, Matt?
I didn't hear a question mark at the end, so I wasn't sure.
Matt?
What exactly
should I say Matt?
Yeah. No, I hear what he's saying, and there are, from the utilities perspective on this, Bill and the utilities have obviously made a statement about fairness here. And at the end of the day, we all agree we want fair rates, and we all agree that everyone has to pay their quote-unquote fair share. But what in the world does that actually mean? And that's actually what that caller was just talking about. The problem in the state of Wisconsin is that without any facts whatsoever, and I mean any, on the utilities part, and I'm talking about the We Energies case because that was one we were actually an intervener in, they did not produce any documentation that backed the claims that they were making about solar being subsidized by the rest of the ratepayers. So the issue I have with this, it's not about whether or not it should be a fairness issue. I 100% agree this needs to be fair. If there are costs attributed to delivering services to solar customers, then we should pay for them. I get that. My issue is we need to study the information based on our specific state and our utility areas and figure out what that number is. What's really interesting about it, and I didn't find out about this until it was too late to really make any noise about it, but We Energies, the only study that I'm aware of ever being done in the state of Wisconsin about what that caller just talked about and about this whole fairness and subsidization cost for distributed generation is a study that We Energies did. They paid for their own consultant. They did it internally. This was not forced on them or anything else. They chose to do this. Their own study that they completed in 2009 reached the conclusion that the value of solar, so if someone puts solar on their house and connects to the grid in We Energies area, the value of that production is about 30% higher than the retail rates of energy. Simply stated, that means the more solar is connected to the grid, and I'm sure there's an extent to which this could become an issue, but the more solar connected to the grid, the more it lowers the cost of energy on the rest of the users on the grid. And that's We Energy's own study. So to now somehow say that in the last 5 years things have changed, and now all of a sudden that's not true, would be kind of a crazy claim to make, because the costs of solar have come down 60 or 70%, and their costs have gone up at 2.5 times the rate of inflation.
And why have their costs gone up so much faster and so much higher?
I honestly don't know. I know I've heard the utilities talk about they've invested a lot in reliability and infrastructure. And again, when you go back to their business model, they're a regulated monopoly that's guaranteed a return based on assets placed in service.
Mm-hmm.
The more money they spend, the more money they can earn.
Mm.
And so the reason rates go up is because when you invest in your infrastructure, which naturally boosts the return you're able to earn, rates go up because the ratepayers have to pay for it. And we don't have a choice right now. you know, we have to buy our energy mm-hmm. from them. We don't have any other alternatives.
Matt Newman is our guest. He's president of the Wisconsin Solar Energy Industries Association and owner of SunVest. We're welcoming phone calls for him at 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Please leave your comments there because this is one of those areas of conversation where I'm particularly interested and we don't have enough time to hear from all of you. Those of you who have installed solar, those of you who would like to leave your comments about rate increases, the future of energy. We'd love to read them. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Matt, a couple Facebook and email messages. Nina wrote, regardless of the increased fees, I would still be interested in adding solar to my home. Are there any financial or state grant monies or programs that give you tax relief to help offset the cost of the panels and the converters?
Yes. There's a federal investment tax credit referred to as the ITC in our industry, and that's a 30% tax credit based on your installed cost. So if you were to install, just for example, like a $20,000 system on your house, you would get a $6,000 tax credit. That's not a tax deduction. It's a true tax credit where you actually get the money back. And then in addition to that, in our state right now at least, I don't know how much funding is going to be out there for this, but Focus in Energy is a statewide energy efficiency and renewable energy organization that's really funded by the utilities, which in and of itself is sort of interesting. But that organization does have some rebates available depending on whether it's a home or a church or a business. It's fairly limited, and it is a limited pool of resources, but that might save, you an extra $2,000 or $2,400.
Joan in Rudolph, hi.
I take issue with the utility representative's thing about the use of subsidy, and Matt hit it right on the head. He played that word up quite a bit with subsidy, kind of blaming, and I've installed solar for my farm, and I paid a big chunk of capital for that. I got only a federal bit of rebate or tax credit. There was nothing from the state at that time. Absolutely nothing. So there was no subsidization of that on anything. And I pay exactly what everybody else pays on the system. And I think the utilities point of view is going to say, okay, let's divide and conquer the people that want to do the right thing and do renewables. Let's make them the bad guys and blame them for all these extra things because everybody else is subsidizing that solar part. I don't get it. There is no subsidization. I don't get anything extra from the utility company. I had to pay for the poles. I had to pay for the wiring. I had to pay for everything the same way I did before I got solar. I pay everything else, the same rate charges, the same base charges, everything else. I still pay for that, and the energy I do generate, yeah, that gets deducted off, but I pay everything else.
Mint.
Yeah, and really not to just pour fuel in your fire because that's not what I'm intending to do here, but when you think about it, you're producing energy on your roof or maybe it's in the field right behind your home or something, and that you had to also pay to connect that to your home, and you had to convert that energy into usable energy through your inverter. So why is it that with the energy that you're producing on your own property, on your own rooftop, why is it that you should have to pay for the energy transfer from the Oak Creek power plant to your house or whatever power area you're in? Why should you have to pay for the poles and all of those other things to get that energy that you produced on your roof to your house? It's on your roof. You don't need all of that other stuff. Now, I know for your excess energy that you're purchasing, you still need that equipment, but that's what your fixed charge is for on your monthly bill, and that's what your variable energy rate is for. And that's the whole point of this argument is, the utilities can say subsidy all they want. They can cry foul. And we're going to say the same thing. Well, you're getting subsidized because you have a guaranteed rate of return and everyone can just basically choke on the bill because we have no ability to buy it from anywhere else. So we can all fight that back and forth. But the reality is the only way this is going to get solved, which is what the Public Service Commission's own staff suggested be done, and that is to do a study in the state of Wisconsin within each utility area that tells us specifically what are the transmission costs, what are the energy production costs? What are the other benefits of solar? Like, we produce 70% of our energy at on-peak times. the utility company's largest cost is producing energy on peak. So if we can shave that peak demand for the utilities, they save more money than they would if we generate the energy at night, which obviously we don't. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole bunch, and I won't go down this path too far because I could go down this rabbit hole for a half hour and bore everyone.
We only have 10 seconds.
Okay. Anyway, we need to do a study on this. We can't just arbitrarily say, let's tax solar because we don't want them to play in our sandbox. And that's what's going on right now.
Thank you, Matt, so much for being with us. Matt Newman, our third guest this hour, president of Wisconsin Solar Energy Industries Association. We also thank Bill Skews, executive director of the Wisconsin Utilities Association, and Samantha Williams for starting us off, staff attorney in Chicago for the Natural Resources Defense Council. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this interesting hour, and to Scotty as well for on-air production in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return to talk about the sixth mass extinction.